From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair, and we are a little bit late this week.
A little bit.
So our apologies to our listeners out there between my severe jet lag after coming back from Finland, and then Sarah had some work commitments this week. We got a little off track, but never fear, it's Friday and we are here. So Sarah, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I won't go too far into it, but I was traveling for work this week and I had a very weird experience where we got on the plane, got off the plane, got on the plane, got off the plane, then got back on the plane. And then we finally got to Nashville. So that I didn't get home until 3:30 last night, or this morning, rather. So yeah, I'm dragging quite a bit, but
yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, if we would have done this Tuesday, like I had a 24-hour travel day, literally,
I know,
Monday, and I would have probably sounded even more out of it than
a little crabby
last week on the show. Well, I just would have like been stumbling through words. It just would have been gibberish. So, anyway, let's get to the show because we do, we want people to get on with their weekend. Anyway, real quick though, elections, PDGA elections for the board of directors still ongoing, up through the 31st. Today, as we are recording this, is the 26th. So please, if you are procrastinating or really, 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 really doing some in-depth research on the candidates and haven't voted yet, please go ahead and do so. And if for some reason you did not get your ballot, we can still get you one. You just need to email memberships@pdga.com. So help us out, be an informed PDGA member, and help us, compose the board for next year. Thank you for assisting with that. Sarah, big show today. We're going to talk European Open. We're going to talk AM Worlds. We're going to talk Idlewild. I think that's about what we have on tap. Both two of those, the latter two of those are already ongoing, but that's okay. But let's circle back to the European Open real quick. And I'm going to just say for anybody who can save up their dollars, start now, go to the European Open. That's all I have to say. It was amazing. The crowds there are on a whole other level from anything disc golf sees. The crew there, UC Maresma and Yuka Terras and everyone there, they run such a tight ship. And lots of cool little touches. The tournament central area is great. They've got bleachers. They've got crowd control down to a science because they have to out there. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous, Sarah. At one point on Saturday, this is the first day that the crowds really, really, really started to come out. I'm walking down the fairway of hole three, and I just had to kind of like stop and like
take it all in.
And just like take a breath for a minute and be like, holy cow, this is so much. Like I was feeling it, and I'm not even a player. And so like just to think about what the players are experiencing in that moment is pretty wild. A bunch of them were like taking out their phones and taking pictures of it during the round and just kind of soaking it all in. It was pretty neat. Austin Hannum, who was on lead card that day, he's like, man, I pitched in like, College World Series games and this wasn't even close.
Really? Like, wow.
This was harder. This was more pressure. And you could tell he felt it a little bit in that round. But it was just such a wonderful experience. And Finland is a magnificent country. Super pretty. Green and lakes everywhere. The coffee and the candy are both excellent. I brought both of them back with me. And it was just a good time. So I don't know. Did you have a chance to watch any of the coverage yet, Sarah? I know you've been busy.
Yep. I watched a little bit of it last weekend. And I think... And you always say this, and I've gotten on the bandwagon a little bit with you on this as someone who's come into a media role as a player for 10 years and then now being a media person. The drama that the Macbeth brought with his comeback that was all kind of around him seeing an article saying that this was a two-man race
between
Will and Ricky, and him being like, oh, heck no. Like, it's not going to go down like that. And he just put pressure on them and put the pedal to the metal and was just like, so confident that round, because I love that he feeds off of that kind of drama and naysayers.
And but, I mean, and also look, like
he reads that stuff too, because I think there's we hear about a lot of pros that are like, oh yeah, if I'm playing in a big event, like I'm not on Facebook, I'm not on Instagram, right. I'm staying off of my phone completely. I don't want to read anything positive or negative about my play, so I don't want it to get to me mentally. But he eats that up, and I think that's so entertaining as a fan of the game.
I love it. Yeah. I love all of it. I mean, he'll even call us on stuff that we say on the podcast. And so, like, I love that. Like, and look, like, I think of the best professional athletes, they do that. Like, Tom Brady, you know, multiple-time Super Bowl champion, NFL MVP, he thrives off of just playing with that chip on his shoulder. And really, at some point, when you are that successful, you've got to still keep that chip on your shoulder. And honestly, for that article to say, hey, it was a two-horse race, unless something tragic happened for Eagle and Ricky and something heroic happened for Macbeth, I mean, we kind of had a confluence of both those things. Macbeth just went hamster, and Eagle and Ricky did not look quite like themselves that day. Early Ricky was kind of holding it together.
He was playing it pretty safe, though.
Like, I don't even know about playing it safe. He was just really like struggling off the tee, and he had some really impressive scrambles. Eagle was really struggling off the tee too. Like that wooded section, it's kind of interesting because over at the Nokia Disc Golf Park, like you think about the last four holes, 15, 16, 17, 18, being really significant, which they are. And even the back nine where it opens up a little more and there's a lot of ropes and OB lines, those are significant. But man, that front stretch in the woods, like 4 through 8 is pretty gnarly. Yeah. And that stretch ate Eagle's lunch. And it almost ate Ricky's lunch.
I think for both of them, there was a couple more OB strokes than they would have wished, and some rollaways, and just some like early tree kicks, and
just some fluky stuff.
Yeah. So that was really entertaining for me on the men's side. Is just like, I wonder who wrote that article. Was that a local
finish? No. It was from within the sport.
Oh, okay.
It was an establishment that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Not PDGA.com.
Okay, all right. I'm picking up what you're putting down. But I'm like, have you never seen Macbeth play before? Like,
well, and the thing it's hilarious because it's like he's walking. We're literally on the course. Like this wasn't even before the before the round started. Yeah. We're on the course on hole 3, and he comes up to me. And he's like, dude, like, what are these guys thinking? Like, do they not like remember? I think it was 2015 where he kind of went into the final round, I think, with the same gap to Ricky. And I will admit, I was deficient in that knowledge as well. I knew that they were tied going into hole 16 in 2015, and then Ricky missed the island like 3 times. I didn't realize that Paul had clawed his way all the way back to make that even a situation that happened. So, but I mean, you come in at hole 3, and he was on fire about it, and I love it. Like it's so great that motivated him. And combined with the way he played the day before, he was pretty salty about how his round 3 went, rightfully so. It was not a good showing on his part. And but man, he made up for it in a good way. And five European Opens in a row is pretty impressive. Before and you were talking about how entertaining that was. Can we talk about how entertaining Albert Tom is?
Yes. Oh my gosh. What was his bazooka? Is that what that was?
I guess like so. Terminator? Like according to the people online, bazookas don't have recoil. I don't know why you would even know this or whatever. It's a technicality. But he makes a huge putt and then leans back like he's shooting a bazooka. And it was super fun.
I think he dropped to a knee and did that.
It was amazing. We need more of that in disc golf. Like it didn't impact anybody else. It was great.
On Instagram immediately after that, I was like, I gotta watch this guy. This is great.
He was super friendly. So for people who really didn't follow the event, he's the Estonian national champion. He's only 21 years old. The thing that immediately stood out to me about him is his build. He is like he looks like he could play linebacker. Like he's very broad shouldered, really athletically built, pretty tall, and just like definitely in that newer era of athletic disc golfers. Mm-hmm. And he's got a really well rounded game. And when he came out on hole two during the final round, and just the fairway is just lined with people, and you have to throw a forehand shot, and he just throws this, like, I'm standing there and I'm like, oh my God, if I had to throw a forehand right now, I would probably throw it into all those people.
Oh my gosh. I saw that too. I don't know. It's hard to pack that many people into tight fairways like that.
And I mean,
going over people's heads.
And crazy. So I'm like, man, this has got to be so nerve wracking for this kid. He's 21 years old on the lead card, the European Open, and just pures it.
Yeah.
And as soon as he put that shot, I was like, all right, he's going to hang. And then he kept hanging for the rest of the round. He actually was a couple shots away from even being more in contention on hole four. He threw a forehand skip shot. It hit off the cage and rolled away. And he went from possible eagle to par. If that one doesn't roll away, he's got another birdie. He's up there. He missed a couple putts late, but he was just super fun. I really, really enjoyed watching him, enjoyed talking to him, just really down to earth, really positive. And he was stoked. He earned his USDGC invite with that. He is going to be coming over for that. And according to his PDJ player page right now, he's also coming for Pro Worlds, Delaware, MVP, Green Mountain, and USDGC. So he's going to come for Worlds and stay here for the whole swing after that. I'm stoked.
Very
That's
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
So good stuff from Albert Tom. And then before we get to the, well, let's go to the FPO side, and then we'll circle back to a couple of the young players I want to talk about. And really, Paige Pierce just shows up on Wednesday morning after sleeping on airport floors.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Due to travel issues in like Iceland. And then just
dominates.
I mean, 10 12 10-07, right? Weren't those her first two rounds?
Yep.
And then like 984, and then I think her final round was like a feeble 956. It was very,
yeah,
very paltry. Paige Pierce, come on. No, I mean, she was absolutely the class of the event. She won by 17 strokes. I mean, really, it wasn't close after round two. Like it was a walk in the park for her out of the last couple rounds.
Yeah, she had an 8-stroke lead after round two.
Yeah.
Over Hannah Blomroos. So yeah, it's interesting because I think in the beginning of the year, we were like, oh man, this isn't Paige Pierce's year. You know, she's kind of cooling down a little bit. She's got all these extracurriculars that she's doing.
Well, and Kat had that super hot stretch.
Yeah.
You know.
And now it's kind of, I don't want to say flip-flopping, because you don't really know from one event to another, but
yeah, I don't think it's flip-flopping. I think it's more just evening out.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
Paige has obviously been pretty hot lately.
I'm kind of speechless. Yeah.
If you look at Idlewild today, she is not currently in lead.
No.
But she has won quite a few events in a row, and she was just on a whole other level, and just some of the shots she was throwing out there. Did you see her park hole 17? Did you see that shot?
I don't think so.
Oh my goodness. So hole 17 is this very difficult par three. It's like 459 feet. So for even most of the MPO, like, wasn't birdieing this hole. I think she birdied it in round two, and there had only been five players before that birdied it.
Wow.
All on the MPO side. And she parked it. She just threw like a flex shot with a defender, played the wind really well, and put it to like 12 feet. And it was a pretty significant moment just to show where she was at on this whole other level. It's a really tricky hole, the way the pins, the pin is at the top of a right to left slope, just really hard to attack. And especially at that distance, it's almost, it's kind of tweener distance for the FPO. And she just made it look pretty easy. It wasn't easy, but it was a tremendous shot. And, and then she ended up birdieing hole 18 to finish, which I think was the only birdie again in the FPO field, to just kind of put an exclamation point on it. She was on just, It was a crazy performance from her. It was pretty tremendous.
I think she's one of those people we talked last time about Macbeth really feeding off of the crowd and how that could, if you're not used to that, or you're anxious about it going in, that could really upset some of your rounds. But she always talks about like putting on a show. She always references that when she's talking about whether she is more of an aggressive player versus laying up. She's like, you know, I want to put on a show. I want to give the crowd what they want, that kind of thing. So I think she really feeds off of the giant crowds and all the energy. I mean, she's a big star in the United States, but as much or more probably overseas too, because they don't get to see. Maybe we take our big stars for granted a little bit.
Yeah,
I think we see them so much and they're so accessible to us, but overseas they're not over there all the time. And
yeah, that's a really good point.
More of an appreciation when they get to travel overseas. So I don't know if I was someone like that, and I think I talked about. I've also feed off of that energy, and I've never played in front of how many people did they say came out on the last day?
3,500.
Whew. Yeah. So I think that really works to her advantage, honestly.
Yeah. And it might, it definitely does. And I think with her right now, I think she is just so hyper focused on Worlds. I think the chip on her shoulder, if we're talking about Macbeth having one, I think the chip on Paige Pierce's shoulder has been there since last September. And that's a long time to be holding on to that. And I think it's only peaking. I think she's starting to peak at the right time. Her putt's been really strong, which was kind of the big problem early in the season. You know, we know she can throw the disc well. It's going to be interesting to see how Worlds goes, because we've got Sunset, which she just dominated at during Ledgestone.
Yep.
But then you've got Northwoods, which is apparently really, really difficult wood to track. So it's going to be fun to watch. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Let's talk about
It's coming up very soon.
It is. It's like not 2.5 weeks.
This weekend, not the weekend after, but the weekend after that.
That's like 2.5 weeks. Crazy.
I live by weekend, clearly.
We all do, I think, at this rate of the season. Yeah. Hannah Blomerush and Evelina Salonen were super fun to watch. They definitely did not play as well as I think some people expected them to, especially Evelina. She even said it herself in like a Facebook post afterwards, yeah, that her game wasn't on. Hannah Blomerush can, she was really enjoyable. I think she is a couple of, you know, mental game years of seasoning away, but I think like she's got all the skills in the world. She really, she can be very precise with some of her shots. She has a good variety of shots. Her putt is a little bit of a weakness at this point. And I don't want to say it like it's terrible or anything, but it's probably not the strongest part of her game. But for her to be able to go second place 2 years in a row at the European Open on that kind of stage is very impressive.
Oh yeah.
I'm excited to see what she does when she comes over for Worlds, because I believe she's also in that mix. You know, her, Evelina, Kristen Tatar, there are some other European players that I really liked watching. This woman, she pronounces it looks like Heidi, but I believe it was, how did she pronounce it? Heidi. It was more like Heide.
Okay.
Either way, Heide Lina, I believe is how she's her name, but she's from Sweden. She was super fun to watch. I really enjoy watching her. She could throw really well. There's some really strong European players right now between, you know, the main three that we're always mentioning. And then over on the MPO side, there's like 16 and 17 year old dudes who are smashing. This kid, Nicholas Antila, he ended up coming in tied for 22nd place, but he was up in like the top 10 the first couple rounds. He looks like Baby Shoestrick.
Really? Okay.
Is what I call. I just think based on his build and like kind of a similar haircut and stuff. I watched this one sequence, the second round, I think. He was on the chase card. It was him, Damon Nissanen, Vina Makala, and I think it might have been Albert Tom.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly. But there was an all Europe Chase Card, and I went to kind of watch it and did some live streaming. By the way, here's the bonus. You need to go to Finland so you can learn how to pronounce everyone's names.
I was just going to comment about how good you are at pronouncing their names now.
You get it. Impressed. You get it when you go there. Thank you.
I was going to attempt one. I'm still working on it.
Okay.
Niemann. I think I got his last name.
Oh, Jesse Nieminen.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was okay. Jesse Nieminen.
We'll talk about him
okay,
too.
Yeah.
But anyway, this kid Nicholas Anttila, he on hole, I think it was seven. He's going to putt, misses it, and it rolls down this huge, 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 huge embankment, and he ends up having to pitch back up and takes like a double bogey six. I think he went from possibly looking at par to a double bogey really, really quick. It might have even gone birdie double bogey. He comes back and just parks the next two holes for birdie. Just really, really tough mentally. Never looked like he was shaken. I'm going to be really curious to keep an eye on him over the years. And then who we were just talking about, Jesse Nieminen. This kid's 20 years old. He's from Finland. I don't think anyone had ever really heard of him. And he gets on lead card most of the, like, for second round, and then ends up top five aces during the final round.
Yep. He shot the hot really round the first round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1077.
Mm-hmm. I swear that
tied the course record.
I know I've heard his name before in the past couple of years.
Yeah?
Yep.
Are you sure you're not thinking of, like, I don't know, because there's the Nieminen, it kind of sounds like Niesinen, like Teemu Niesinen. No?
I don't think so.
Either way, there's just a lot of really good young European players, and it's like, man, let's just keep going over there and having these events, and then let's get some of them over here. Like, you know how I've always been on the let's get the Evelina and Henna, start the Kickstarter for them. Like, we need a whole big bring the young Europeans, European invasion Kickstarter. Someone start it and I will donate, because it's just, they're all just really fun to watch and they all really respect the game. They all compose themselves really well. They carry themselves really well. And it's just Finland in particular, but Europe itself is just a really, really big bright spot for the sport right now. And I was just very thankful to be able to kind of go and experience it all in person.
That's awesome. I'm glad you got to do that. And I apologize for Bruno barking straight into the microphone a couple seconds ago.
Didn't even hear him. You did a good job. You did a good job of blocking that out. Oh gosh, I just had one more thought and it left me. But
I saw the food looked also delicious. The crepes.
Didn't you? Oh yeah, man.
Crepes like nonstop.
The crepe cones.
Yeah.
They came all the way up from Helsinki to work at that place, and that's like 2 hours.
Wow.
I mean, it's genius. I really would like to see more tournaments be able to do this, and I'm sure the European Open has the advantage of being able to say, hey, we're going to have 3,000 people coming. You're definitely going to make money. But they had the same, like 4 or 5 food vendors there the whole weekend.
Wow.
So you could get, like, I ate these really good salads every day. They were like chicken and tabbouleh salads. So they had like a salad cart, and then they had another cart that was doing like sandwiches, like pork sandwiches and burgers. And then another one that was doing more like seafood based fare. They had like the Finnish lake box, and the Finnish, like, one of them was a bunch of, like, it may have been sardines or something. And then they also served paella, which was very good. And then they had the crepes.
Yeah.
And it was super cool. Like, you could sit there at Tournament Central and the lines weren't that long. They moved them pretty quick. You could get food every day. You didn't have to leave. I really hope we can start to get more events doing that, where you can just say, hey, look, come sit at our Tournament Central for 4 days and you're going to have business. It just makes it easier for everyone. And yeah, the food was great. It was awesome.
Cool.
So yeah, I will give one more plug to everybody who is listening. Come to Finland next year. It's great.
Okay.
And it was light until after midnight.
I cannot. And then what time?
All right. So there was one night where I was out. There was one night I left the course at 12:15 and it was still like a glimmer of pink, like sunset out on the horizon. And then there was another night I was up finishing stuff up at like 2:30 and the sun was starting to come up.
Oh my gosh. So people invested some really high quality blackout curtains.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Or just work yourself to like 16-hour days and you'll be so tired that you'll just sleep.
That's my secret.
Your
strategy. Yeah.
That's what I do. Yeah. All right, Sarah, let's do this. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and do the preview section of the show today, since we're putting a bow on European Open. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, we're back. Sarah, let's do some hot rounds. And why don't you kick things off for us?
All right. Let's see. So most of our hot rounds on the FPO side are from different events. Actually, the River City Open yielded 3 of the hottest rounds on the FPO side.
What is considered the River City? Because there's lots of cities with rivers.
Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's where
I suppose. They're probably. Is that what makes the rapids so grand?
I guess so. Have you ever been to Grand Rapids?
I have not.
It's a really cool town.
I've never been.
I went there with with Sean for a site visit for Masters Worlds 2 years ago.
Oh, cool.
Lots of breweries. Just lots of little cool shops, and I'm a fan. I like it. All right. Anyway, back to hot rounds. The hottest round from that event and the 5th hottest rated round on our leaderboard was Lisa Fakus. She shot a 960. Her second round, she finished -4 in second place. Congrats to Lisa. She's been playing really good.
Yeah, she's kind of on the upswing lately, yeah, which is good.
I'm very happy to see that. She's a great person. I like playing with her. Tied with Lisa's 960 was a friend of mine, Liz Carcipian. She also shot a 960 her second round at that event, and she ended up taking first place, shooting 6 under par in a field of 10 women. So that's huge for her. She recently had her second child and has been also on an upswing lately. So I'm really happy to see that. So congratulations, Liz. The 4th hottest rated round was from the TOP Wilderness Ranch presented by Black Diamond Auto Glass. And that was Jennifer Allen. She was the only female to play that event, but her first round was a 967. And she obviously finished in first place, but yeah, she played pretty well and made the leaderboard. So congratulations to Jen. The next was, I'm not sure if this is an acronym or a full word. I'm going to say it as a word though. Batedag. Nope. Batedaga.
Sounds like a bad Kid Rock song.
Tour stop number 6, Brian McLean Park, San Antonio, driven by Innova Discs. Yeah. Okay. there's a pretty big field there as well. There's 10 women, and Christina Lithicum shot a 969 her first round to finish that event in second place. Congratulations to her.
I think it's probably like BATA DGA, something Disc Golf Association.
BATA DGA. That works too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just being creative. I don't know.
Ba what to ba.
I need sleep.
Go ahead.
The next highest rated round was my disc golf bestie, Ellen Widboom. She also played in the River City Open and finished in third place. Her third round was rated 983. So congrats to her. And the hottest rated rounds, plural, was Paige Pierce. Not surprisingly, she shot, a 10-12 and a 1,007.
And a 984.
And a 984, yep.
She would have had the top 3 hot rounds.
Yes. True statement. Oh, well then that also includes, for some reason our technology did not bring in European Open this week, but that also includes some of these other rounds then too. So Hannah Blomery shot a 997, Katrina Allen,
oh, right,
76. She also set a 972. So basically all the hot rounds that I just said are
bonus hot rounds.
So these are bonus. All other hot rounds include Kristen Tatar, Evelina. Sorry about that, guys.
You get a hot round. You get a hot round. Everybody gets a hot round.
Yes.
Oprah style. All good. It's
so,
it's
just
all
so
good.
Many hot rounds from the women's field. Congratulations.
I'll try and freelance it a little bit on the men's side too, because we did have some tweaks there. But Good stuff over on the FPO side. On the MPO side, starting out at the Charlie Ventnor Open. This is in LaGrange, Kentucky. Noah Meinsma shot a 1066 rated opening round. Ended up tying for fourth place to finish that tournament. That was a very nice job. Always like to see Noah getting on the list. He is good people. Scott Withers tossed a 1067 rated opening round. This was out at the North Umpqua Invitational presented by Innova Discs up in Roseburg, Oregon. And Scott Withers, as he often does in Oregon, won that event. So very nicely done, Scott. And here's where we kind of get in some trickiness with the European Open, because we had Ricky Wysocki with both a 1070 and a 1072 to open the tournament. That would technically be our third place on the hot rounds. But we're going to have a bonus third place. And this is a guy who deserves it. Barry Schultz, 1073 out at the Riverside Summer Open. That was his opening round, followed up with a 1071, and he won that event by 9 strokes. Pretty good stuff.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. That leaves us with Jesse Nieminen and his opening round at the European Open, which tied the course record there, 12 under par, 1077 rated out at the Beast. He ended up tying for fifth place. And our hottest round of the weekend, again from the Charlie Ventnor Open, this was Tim Barham, shot a 1087 rated second round to win that event by 6 strokes clear of Chris Dickerson. So nicely done, Tim Barham. Good size field out at the Charlie Ventnor Open.
Oh yeah, how many were playing?
36, 40, between MPO and FPO, 40.
Okay.
And then he had some 124 players total, but some solid names. I mean, top 5 on the MPO, we had Tim Barham, Chris Dickerson, Alex Russell, Noah Meinsma, Matt Oram. By the way, speaking of Alex Russell and then someone else who's on this list, Garrett Gerthy, I saw they just both received promotions to higher teams on Innova. So congrats to those guys. I will also say I apologize if I missed other people. Those were just the ones that popped up into my consciousness this week as I tried to recover from travel. So good to see some good people and hard workers, jumping up higher on the squad there. Do you know of any more promotions that we need to know of?
Those are the only two that I saw, but I have
just want to make sure you are kind of on the team.
I did not receive a promotion. Maybe I missed an email in my inbox or something.
They're waiting till after win Pro World.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's I've been kind of, as we say in the corporate world, out of pocket the past couple days. but I did see those, and that is super exciting and very, very deserving. Both of them. So. Congratulations.
Definitely well-deserved for those guys. All right, so going on right now, Sarah, we are already through quite a bit of this tournament, but it's kind of a big deal. The Amateur World Championships are going on right now in York, Pennsylvania. We've got like 700 competitors, 9 courses, I think. It bumps up to like 10 if you want to count different layouts, all over the area there. And, this is some marathon golf. I can't remember even how many. I think there's 6 rounds, then semis, then finals in the main divisions. So you've got some grueling 4 to 5 hour rounds, and then you've got to do that every day. And this is what Pro Worlds used to be. And then all the pros said, "We don't want to work that hard." I'm just kidding, pros. We love you.
Back in my day.
We love you, pros. We don't give you a hard time at all. But it's so that's going on right now. We've had coverage over on our PDGA live scoring. There will be some post-production coverage of the I believe just the final nines from MA1 and FA1. That's going to be coming up from Gatekeeper Media, so be sure to check that out, because it'll be cool to see what's happening. Especially there's some pretty tight battles, at least in the advanced division. Noah Osborne and Aaron DeVries. I think it's Aaron DeVries. They are both tied right now at 31 under par, with Sean Goddard in third at 26 down. So a little bit of a gap there. And then in the FA1 side, there's been some shuffling about. I believe they're Ali Pistora was in the lead, and then a few people leapfrogged her yesterday. So right now it's Taylor Kramer and Erica Weir are in first and second, respectively, just one shot apart. But the top five, let's say top four, only separated by four strokes.
Yep, very close.
Going into semis there. So, and that's probably. Actually, so we have an extra round on the books for them already. The MA1 has not been updated yet for today. So we'll see what's going on there. Sarah, how many times did you play Am Worlds?
Oh yeah, I played Am World. So actually I won my first state title on these courses.
Oh, nice.
I grew up in, I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm from Philadelphia, but I went to school out in Western Pennsylvania.
West Philadelphia?
No.
East, born and raised?
No, more like Southwest Philadelphia. Oh, Delaware County. But anyway, so York, Pennsylvania is kind of in the middle of the state, and so I've played kind of between Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Pennsylvania when I started. And so I can't remember every single hole, obviously, but this course is pretty, it's got a pretty good mix of open shots and wooded shots.
Which one?
Oh, sorry, Codorus.
Okay, yeah. That's where they're doing the finals, I believe.
I believe so, yeah.
Right now they're on Muddy Run.
Okay, I don't think I've played that one before. There's also Gifford Pinchot State Park.
Okay, and then they were also at Heritage Hills, which I believe is a golf course.
Yep. So I actually won my state, not to make this all about me, but this hole is still in play. I was happy to see. There's an island hole, and I want to say it's 18, but don't quote me on that. That's probably like 250, 280 feet. And I won the state championships because me and my friend Frida, who I don't know if she's playing. It was basically, we were just throwing our entire bag and it was very windy and whoever got inside the island was basically going to take the win. And I ended up inside the island before her.
Nice.
It was very anxiety inducing to end on a hole like that as an amateur with tons of people watching me and then running out of discs because I just kept going out of bounds. But
that sounds difficult.
Yeah, no, but this course it's beautiful. There's a lake. There's actually a permanent mini golf course there, which is really cool. I still have a water bottle that I use from this event. I love it.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then what I remember about the Gifford Pinchot State Park, there's the boulder course. And that's kind of explains the terrain perfectly. It's very rocky and there's lots of elevation, very, very wooded. So pretty tight. And I was talking to Erica Weir, who is sponsored by Innova, a few days ago, and she was like, "Oh, I'm not used to playing such tight woods golf, so I'm really not sure how I'm going to do." But she's obviously overcome that and sitting in second place right now. So that's very cool.
I mentioned that we didn't have MA1 scores yet for round six. They're in progress right now, It looks like Noah Osborne is making a statement. He's 11 down.
Wow.
For the round through 15. And currently is sitting with an 8-shot lead.
Dang.
Overall.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense on the math that I'm seeing here, though. I don't know.
Maybe it's just got to get updated or something.
Oh, no, it is. Okay, it is. There was the player he was tied with has gone 3-under for the round. So struggle bus for Aaron DeVries and strong round for Noah Osborne. So we'll see, though. There's still plenty of golf left to play. They got semifinals and final nine coming up tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
there's a couple other shout outs that I wanted to make. Lauren Nogtegal, who is actually running for the board, she is sitting in first place in Am Masters 40 plus, and she shot a 10-13 rated round at Codorus.
Dang.
Yeah. So she has a pretty substantial lead right now, 15 strokes. So I'm hoping she can bring it home. That's pretty exciting. And then one of my disc golf moms, Karen Shearer, we go way back. She's one of the first women that I ever played with 10 or 11 years ago. She is sitting in first place at Am Masters 55 plus with a 3-stroke lead.
Okay. Okay.
And my friend Angie Jones also in first place. In the 50 plus, she's got a 13-stroke lead.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm only focusing on the women's divisions. There's
That's cool. No worries. Yeah. It's fine. I'm going to give a shout out to PDGA technology director, Steve Gantz, currently tied for sixth.
I saw he was playing
in AM Masters 50 plus. I think he was actually up a little higher before, hit some struggles in round four, but for the most part playing strongly. And then, one AM world champion has already been crowned, I think, because it was a pretty small division. So that was, Paula Rowan taking home the Amateur Masters women. Oh, Paula Bowen. Sorry. Amateur Masters Women 70 plus. So very congrats to Paula. We have a new world champion.
Yay. To answer your question though, from 5 minutes ago, a lot of tangents, no sleep. My first amateur world championships was 2010 in Ohio. And then I played 2012 in Charlotte and then 2014 in Minneapolis. So I played three and then I ended up, it was actually the 5-year anniversary when I met Sean this week. Because I played really well, I ended up taking second place after Vanessa Van Dyken, which is when our friendship began. But yeah, lots of cool. I love the whole vibe at AmWorlds. There's lots of pros that go. I know Will Schuestrick and his wife Trisha are there. I think Paul McBeth was there.
Yeah, I think he was selling out of like 1,057 frisbees in like 5 minutes it was like a commemorative for his new ratings record.
Yeah, the Fly Mart is a huge deal. The doubles, all the kind of ancillary events are a really big deal. And I think the excitement is just a little bit different at AM Worlds than it is at Pro Worlds. I think people get involved in some of the extracurricular events a little bit more. The players parties have always been really fun. Because this is kind of like in my home territory, I was kind of hoping to go and just help or watch, but didn't work out with my work schedule.
For people who maybe aren't in AM Worlds but are listening to this or haven't played in AM Worlds, you know, what is it like, that kind of marathon style of just round after round after round? Like, is it as grueling as it sounds like?
Well, I was younger when I was playing.
True.
Not that much younger though, but I'm not sure I could handle, like, so, middle Pennsylvania was one of the states that was getting that heat wave early in the week. So I am not sure I would have been able to handle like 100 degrees while playing two rounds a day. So I don't know. I think it was really fun. The last time I did that, obviously, was 2014. And in Minneapolis, I don't think I'd ever even been to that state before, let alone play disc golf courses there. So to be able to play, like, I think we played four different courses or something, four or five different courses, and just to be able to play on such different layouts in woods, in the open, out of bounds, all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure it levels or maybe yields the best golfer in a way that maybe a Pro Worlds doesn't, because you're kind of getting all around style golf, as with Pro Worlds, we're playing two courses typically. And it's like,
right.
But then again, Smuggler's Knot last year, those courses, Fox Run and Brewster Ridge, are complete polar opposites. So, and that obviously yields like a very well-rounded player as well. So I don't know. It's mentally grueling, and you kind of just have to be a really well-rounded golfer and go to sleep early and get your nutrients and make sure you're taking all of your, you know, health precautions and drinking a lot of water and preparing for sunlight and all those things. I sound like such an old person right now.
That's okay. We'll
these are the things that I have to worry about now in my old age.
Yeah. No, that's understandable, but it's good to have that perspective and, you know what it really takes to hustle around for a week playing disc golf. So
it's fun.
We will go ahead and we will congratulate the rest of our amateur champions on next week's show. But if you want more information on, you know, how any of your friends are playing, head over to pdga.com or pdgalive.com and you can check in on how everything's going. Definitely some strong rounds. I'm looking at the ratings and I'm seeing quite a few over 1,000. So good performances out in York, PA.
There was one more thing that I thought of. Yeah. Sorry, I know you're trying to wrap up. Most of these people, I'm going to venture out to say none of these people play disc golf full time, and most of them have full time jobs or are like junior age, maybe going to school. So it's almost like a vacation. Like,
yeah, okay, it's a celebration.
Yeah, it's like, all right, I've got these 10 days of PTO that I'm going to go take. Like, I want to play as much golf as possible. And sometimes I feel that way playing pro disc golf. I'm like, all right, I'm going to play one round a day, and I'm in a town that I don't, I'm not like super excited to be in. Like, what am I going to do with the rest of my day?
Sure.
So I think if you're kind of getting your biggest bang for your buck by playing all of the rounds, like squishing as many, as much disc golf into a week's vacation as possible. So I think that's kind of a, I hope they continue doing it that way. I think it's a really cool way of doing it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I know next year is going to be in Orlando too. Yeah. So that's even more, you know, that's another one that's nice and got plenty of stuff to do around that.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So let's shift gears real quick from the big AM event to this weekend's big pro event, which is the Idlewild Open, where breaking news, Sarah, I'm about to literally while we watch this, I'm going to watch James Conrad ace hole nine.
Did he?
Because he is aced hole nine.
Yeah, I see it now.
And he is on the live feature card, which is ongoing right now. So Idlewild Open, I'm going to watch James Conrad here. It looks like he's got a little putter turnover shot. Wait, but this is out in Burlington, Kentucky.
Yes.
This is part of the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And a surprising number of players who were out in Europe hustled back and are playing this one out at Idlewild, which has just so many trees. And here's James Conrad with just a gorgeous putter turnover shot. Like, that wasn't even...
All right, now you're making me jealous.
It's the kind of shot that makes you jealous. Well, it's the kind of shot that makes you jealous.
Did you just
like,
go
it's
to
crazy.
It on the live feed?
I just rewound it to look at it, and everyone's kind of jumping up and down to see for sure, because it's a right hand bending shot, and so he threw a little putter turnover shot, and
I know which one. And it's like super tight off the tee, and then the basket's in that little. It's like covered up with a low ceiling.
It's tucked off to the right.
Yeah.
There's another shot that's really aceable too. I think it's hole 11. That one's just a dead straight shot. That's an elevated pin. I think that's the other kind of ace run shot. This one was pretty impressive. Also, it looks like Emerson Keith aced hole 3 earlier today, 407 footer.
Wow,
so
awesome.
Some scoring going on here at Idlewild. We are obviously in the midst of it while we record this episode. So that's kind of fun. We will not do picks then, obviously, because that will, you know, I'm going to pick James Conrad because he was actually, I will say, I was thinking James Conrad before this event,
sure.
Though. I know that doesn't hold any weight because I'm saying this, but he's played well there before, obviously. I think is he the defending champ at this one?
Oh gosh.
No, I think Conrad won 2 years ago. That was right. He won 2 years ago. He ended up beating Macbeth the final round. I think Macbeth ended up winning last year. But James Conrad has always played pretty well here. And we're getting into James Conrad territory on the tour as we get into kind of the woodsy stretch. He loves this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, not terribly surprised to see him playing well.
This was one of, Kevin Jones' breakout performances last year where we got,
he was in first going into the final round and hit the struggles there. And I'm pretty sure Macbeth ended up winning this one. I feel bad not remembering that entirely, but it's a pretty safe bet. It's a pretty safe bet.
I mean, we could just look it up.
No, I know we could. But I know Conrad won the year before that. So obviously that was my inclination was to say James Conrad to do well this weekend. Yeah. But anyway, Idlewild Open, Burlington, Kentucky, one of the more difficult courses on tour. Plenty of trees. And even on the holes that are a little more open, they have strung it with OB. My goodness, this hole 16 today threw up some digits. Paige Pierce took a 9 on hole 16 today.
I saw that. That's hole 16 was my nemesis last year. And
Holly Finley took an 8.
Yeah. So it's funny. I was watching a little bit of the FPO round this morning, and I wasn't watching it with the YouTube chat function up.
Oh, okay.
But Dixon and Robert were like, oh, somebody on the chat board just said, why don't they just throw in the middle? And they were kind of,
I mean, how wide is that fairway?
I want to say,
because on the whole map,
I'm going to say 25 to 30 feet.
Oh my gosh. And it's just roped the whole way.
Is like, yes, of course the goal is to shoot just in the middle, but it's so elevation as we've
seen, like, it's so easy.
Yeah, elevation as we've seen on camera does not, or does, elevation as we've seen does not come through on camera very well.
Yes.
So this hole is actually, you're like, you're throwing and then the fairway kind of dips down a little bit and then it goes back up and then it goes severely downhill toward the basket in a creek where there's also roped OB behind the basket where Paige went OB the last time. And, you know, my gameplay for that hole was just like throw a high hyzer over to the right and let it fade in. And I tried doing that and the headwind was so strong that it was just flipping my most overstable disc. So,
okay. Yeah,
like you can have a game plan on this hole, but a little bit of wind might throw it off. And it's harder than it looks, guys.
Yeah, I believe it. Anyway, I was correct. Paul McBeth won last year. James Conrad the year before that. James Conrad came in second place in 2018. Paige Pierce has won the last 2 years in a row. And she was off to a pretty solid start for three in a row until she hit that hole 16. She's now looking at tied for seventh place.
But it's
she also
tight.
Did take a – she took a seven on hole seven as well.
She's only three back of Katrina.
Yeah, she's only three back. Katrina Allen currently in the lead. Elaine King, Holly Finley tied for second place at five.
I'm not surprised. Sarah
Hokum, Jessica Weiss, Madison Walker all tied for fourth. No, I'm not surprised either. Both of them thrive in the woods. It's, you know, the woods are the great equalizer, right? Like, you don't necessarily have to throw a mile to play well in the woods.
Right.
If you have your accuracy and you've got Holly Finley, who has, you know, made her playing career up in Wisconsin, so you're going to get woods. You've got Elaine King, who is just a baller and in general, you know,
she's
but
a
plays a lot
a
in North Carolina. Well, and, but she plays in North Carolina, which is woods.
Yeah. I was making a dad joke.
Oh, okay.
She's
sorry.
A disker, not a baller.
There you go. Yeah, that's true. But
now I know why people think I'm nerdy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They it's true.
Yeah.
It's okay though.
It's all right.
Anyway. But anyway, Kevin Jones currently in a three. So right now it's three-way tie. Conrad, Jones, Garrett Gerthy, part of the way through round one. And so obviously, since we're talking about where you can watch it, you can watch this over on the Disc Golf Pro Tour YouTube channel. I'm thinking they may have had to restart their stream today because this doesn't look like the same one that I embedded on the PDGA website earlier today.
Tell you, yeah, that link was broken.
So I'm going to have to go and fix that. And then the post-production is not on your usual standard bearers. There is not Jomez or Central Coast this week. The lead card MPO is going to be on GK Productions, and the lead card FPO will be on Anheuser TV.
Okay.
So be sure to go look for both of those on YouTube as we get a couple different teams up in the mix this week. So make sure that you go subscribe to those channels if you do want to see the post-produced stuff. It can always be a little tricky when we start getting channels that aren't quite as known in the mix, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't support them. Both of them have done great work, I believe. I think Anheuser was out at Jonesboro earlier this year. GK Pro has done quite a few of the Pro Tour events now on the FPO side. They definitely did Ledgestone, and I can't remember the other ones they've done, but they shoot really well. They put a solid product together. We live in a good age of disc golf right now where you can see it filmed and produced really well. That's the other shout out I should have given from the European Open was the coverage from Spin TV was fantastic. The crews they had out there filming were awesome, especially these guys from Epic DG Productions who put together a lot of the B-roll like glamour shots. Holy cow, those guys are doing awesome stuff.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching that coverage.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a disc golfer, people, and a fan of disc golf. Sarah, let's pretend that we don't know who's winning right now. Who were you leaning toward when you kind of thought about who might win this event?
Honestly, I did not put much thought into it. I'm a little bit sour because I was registered for this event and had to drop out because of work. But just with her track record out here and how confidently she's been playing recently,
Paige would have been the pick, right?
Paige.
Yeah. And I already mentioned that I would have picked James Conrad.
Yeah.
I do like seeing Garrett Gerthy at the top right now.
I know.
Like, I don't think this course and then immediately think, oh, yeah, Garrett Gerthy.
But he's surprised us this year.
Exactly.
I mean, winning in Santa Cruz, like, we kind of pegged him as an open distance thrower.
And here's the crazy part, though, too, is, like, this course is still very long. For how wooded it is, it's clocking in at 9,200 for the men and 8,900 for the women. These are still some very, very difficult courses.
Yeah.
So no picks for us this week. That's okay. Should we do picks next week for Music City?
I think we should. Music City actually has a pretty stacked field, at least on the FPO side.
I believe it. I'm sure on the MPO side it'll be pretty solid too. So we'll hold off on the picks until next week. But if you do want to follow Idlewild, make sure to check it out on all the Disc Golf Pro Tour channels that you need. That would be the Disc Golf Pro Tour YouTube channel, and then GK Productions on MPO, Anheuser TV on FPO, and obviously our good friends at UDisc Live. That's my last shout out. I got to stay with the UDisc crew out at the European Open.
Very cool.
And they were awesome. They crushed it, as they always do, and they're just such good people, super fun to hang out with. So always nice to have them in our events.
Awesome.
Sarah, I think that's probably going to do it for the show. I know that wasn't the most in-depth preview of Idlewild, but I will say it's a little bit trickier when the event's ongoing. But now everyone knows that they should go and find James Conrad's ace.
Yes, I'm going to watch that
whole nine
right now.
If you want like the timestamp for it, if you're watching the live coverage, it was... I don't know. Was it like around 40-ish, 40 minutes or so? You can scrub through and see which hole number they're at, but good stuff. So we'll be back next week with more talk on Music City Open. And then, Sarah, it's going to be Worlds soon.
Yay! We'll actually get to see each other in person.
I was going to say, should we try and record this in person? What's that?
I said you're going to give me all the candy that you bought for me in Finland.
Oh, that's right. I got to make sure my daughter doesn't eat all of it beforehand.
Just save me one piece. That was just one.
Well, what kind of candy do you like? Like, cause this is, I don't know if you're going to like this stuff. Do you like black licorice?
No, I was going to say anything but licorice, but if it's like astoundingly good, like can't get in the United States licorice, then I'm willing to try it.
It's black licorice, but then it has like the kind that there's like gross kind there that everyone tells me it's like salty black licorice. I didn't get that.
Hard pass.
I got black licorice that has like, it's like a, you know, the licorice tube, but then it's got filling in it of like chocolate or lemon. Those are the only ones I have because I ate the raspberry one.
I could dig the chocolate, possibly.
The chocolate one? I'll see if I can save you one.
Okay, thank you.
All right. All right, well then, until next week, thank you for listening. That was Sarah Sinclair. I'm Steve Hill. This was PDJ Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you soon.